Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Bienvenidos. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another beautiful episode of Cooking in Mexico from A to Z. I'm one of your hosts, Alon Sanchez, alongside my beautiful mother,
Sarela Martinez.
And of course, we're being broadcasted on our the best ever Heritage Radio Network. Our good friends from HRN allow us to have this beautiful platform to talk about things all Mexican ingredient, technique, culturally significant people that come here and share their unbelievable knowledge and background and experience with all of us to enlighten us, to further grow our appreciation for Mexican ingredients and all the things that come along with it. And today we are unbelievably privileged to have one of the, I think this is, my mom has been very excited about this guest, as I am as well. We have Mauricio Velasco de Leon, of course, and we're going to be talking about the idea of the first Mexican celebrity chef. And we're going to speak a lot about, obviously, Josefina and this great idol that she is. But we have her nephew joining us, and we're really excited so you can share this unbelievable story of this woman that has impacted so many people's lives. So muchísimas gracias, Mauricio, for coming and joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's very exciting to talk about food and Josefina and to see both of you.
Thank you. Well, I just want to start this by quoting something that she wrote in the dedication to this book, Mexican Cookbook for American Homes. Because she, this is how she was so brilliant. She dedicates to the Mexican cooks who are going to be cooking for their husbands and who are working very hard and has this very old fashioned kind of language, but dedicated to the way Mexican cooks live there. But when she, that's translated into English, she talks about to the women who work so hard outside the home and who, no mention of the husband, you know, so she was so brilliant in understanding the minds of all of her fans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Marisa, can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think your aunt, Josefina, really started to understand and recognize, you know, how home cooks were able to sort of catalog their recipes, make sure that those things came to the surface and to the forefront. Can you talk a little bit about your earliest memories with that and what that meant for you?
Right. So Josefina was my grandmother's cousin. And she was always kind of like a presence in the Velasquez de Leon family. She died in 1968. I was 5 years old. I don't think I ever met her in person, but I didn't need to meet her because she was everywhere in my family. You know what I'm saying? She was like this bigger than life presence. We all knew about her some way. And when you're a little kid, you really don't know how big your family is. You just hear about aunts and uncles, so that, but you really don't know. But we knew that there was a very famous cook. I don't think we ever called her a chef because she didn't go to culinary school. She just learned cooking by doing. She created her mom about it. So she was a big presence in the family, and we see one or two books there. And it took many, many years for me and for many other Mexicans to discover how big her contribution to Mexican cooking was. And we can talk about all these things, but just as a little introduction, she published more than 140 cookbooks, which sounds almost ridiculous, right? 140 cookbooks. It's not a person. It's a company. But, And we're talking about this published in the 1940s, 1950s, before computers, before Photoshop, before word processing. Everything was done letter by letter, quite literally, right? So it's just amazing. And Sarella was talking a little bit about the family and the dedication of this cookbook that we can talk about in a little bit. And how she didn't, she doesn't talk about the husband or the men in her life. And one of the things that is very important for her. So she was born in Aguascalientes in 1899, north of Mexico City, like 260 miles from north of Mexico City, in the Aguascalientes state. She was the older of four, daughters. So she was the older of four girls in the house. Her dad died. And when she was like around 11 or 12, the Mexican Revolution broke. And, you know, in a revolution, families go through a lot of different changes. And what happened with them was basically they lost their land. They lost their ranch. They lost their property. So from being in a very comfortable position, they, Josefina and her parents, they had to sort of like reinvent themselves. Her dad, Josefina's father, died when she was like very young, I think like around 7 or 8. And then she just continued having this sort of like quiet life in post-revolutionary Mexico until, and she didn't marry until she was 30 years old. And she married a businessman, and the marriage didn't last very long. She was married to him only for 11 months, and then he died, I believe, from a heart attack. And that tragedy sort of like dictated her life, because women in those days, especially in traditional Mexico, were not able to work, were not able to teach, were not able to do anything. Their role was in the family, in the house, taking care of the family, cooking and doing domestic chores, right? But she was 31, 32. She didn't have children. She didn't have a husband. So she could do whatever she wanted, pretty much, right? What she knew what to do was to cook. So she started.
I have one of those right there. That's in the other screen right there.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm looking at it right now.
Right. I'm sure there is. Sarella understands a lot about this thing. Like you're a woman, you have a family or children in your case, Sarella. In the case of Josefina, she didn't have children, but she was like, what can I do? I mean, I have to do something. And she knew how to cook. She obviously have a passion for cooking. So she started, the first culinary academy in Mexico City run by a Mexican. There was a famous academy, cooking academy in Mexico back then in 1933 when she opened this academy. There was another one in Mexico City that was very famous, but was run by a man, and it was run by a man from Spain. So you can imagine that the kind of cooking that was thought in those days for Mexican women was not exactly what Josefina had in mind. So because she was a woman teaching other women who had the opportunity, going back to the traditions of those days, women in Mexico, even in a city as cosmopolitan as Mexico City, they just couldn't go out and do whatever they wanted. But going to a cooking class was acceptable, was encouraged, was something that people wanted their wives to do so they can learn things. And Josefina took this opportunity and just became like a legend in Mexican cooking. Right?
So, I mean, you can make the parallels to like someone like a Julia Child, right? A Mexican Julia Child. There's a lot of those parallels associated with Doña Josefina for those reasons of being able to teach, not necessarily being professionally trained. I think that's important. And I would love to talk about the subject matter of being able to say, all right, you know, this is the first part time that Mexican women can step out there and be the individualistic and make their mark, right? I think it's important to mention. You know.
She took her cooking school on the road. But she was so smart that she used to let people know ahead of time that she was coming, because she was the first one to do a TV show She did radio shows. She had newspaper columns. She had products. You know, she was this amazing woman. Her classes are always full of like at least 100 people. And sometimes, you know, standing room only. And she went all over the country and wrote this amazing, regional books that are still in existence. And I mean, not published, but, you know, the Schlesinger Library has many of them, you know, in their files. And it's just an amazing story to tell that she was such an entrepreneur. And it was just, I mean, she's just an example to all of us.
Yeah, women. Yeah. Mom, you talked a little bit about in Mexico City, how some of the started cataloging what the ladies that cooked in the home would make, right? Like the huilacoche crepas was one of these kind of examples of this refined cooking that happened in high-end homes in Mexico City. So would you concede that maybe Doña Josefina was part of that movement of like cataloging those recipes or no?
She did, but she also did the food of the poor. You know, at that time, corn was supposed to be like only for the poor.
Yeah, she like most women in Mexico in those days, she was cooking French food or Spanish food from Spain, right? And it was all about elegant food and food for like big dinner parties and to impress in society, so like that. And I think little by little, and I mean it's almost impossible to know exactly why, but little by little she noticed that there was this need for Mexicans to know more about Mexican cooking, right? And this system that Zarela was just mentioning, I think that was a stroke of genius. She was very religious. So one of the things she would do is like she would organize and sort of like team up with different churches and religious organizations all over the country and say, okay, I go and give you a free class in, let's say, in Querétaro, and I give a free class sponsored by the church. And in exchange, I want the women who are going to be attending my class to give me some of the regional recipes from that, right? So she said, like, I come to Querétaro, I tell you about all this stuff, then you give me some of the Querétaro recipes and influences and ingredients and techniques. And
totally. I love it.
Right? So she traveled all around the country and produced the first book in Mexican cuisine that encompassed the regional differences between the Yucatan and the north and the south, everything, right? So, and then she was so smart when she broke that book into 32 different books with every little state. And that's why she was such a smart person. She had this global book, comprehensive book of regional cuisines in Mexico, and then broke it into, okay, cuisines of Querétaro, cuisines of San Luis Potosí, cuisines of Oaxaca, cuisines of Yucatan. So.
In the 40s, can you imagine that kind of thinking? I mean, this is amazing stuff. It's getting me, I have goosebumps thinking about how, oh my God, how forward thinking she was. Unbelievable.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2 Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. but Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Okay, so, yeah, and one of the things that is incredible to think is, like, going back to that era, right, this is a woman traveling the country alone. She had, like, an assistant that she was another woman who was, like, kind of her companion, secretary. She would go with her to all these things. And they have a driver. The driver was a man, right? But still, like, a woman traveling in by car in Mexico in the 1950s was unheard of, right? But she was doing it, and she traveled all over the country and collected all these cuisines, all these techniques of all regional, all these regional secrets that nobody in Mexico knew at the time, right? I mean, people from the north knew the north thing, stuff. People from the south knew the south stuff. From Quintana Roo, they knew the Quintana Roo thing. And in Mexico City, obviously, by being the capital, they knew a little bit about everything, but not really that much. So she put together this book, and I mean, with Rick Bales, the famous chef, he told me once when I met him, it's like, without your great aunt, Mexico would not have a catalog of regional cuisines in Mexico. So she did that, and that was, like, I think that's her biggest contribution to the landscape of Mexican cuisine in that area especially.
Well, I found that direct quote about how she addressed the American cook. It is an honor for me to dedicate the present work to the ever-growing society of enlightened womanhood in this hemisphere. You just imagine, you know, just imagine in this manner, I express my gratitude to the North American women who have demonstrated a sincere desire to become acquainted with Mexican cooking.
Mm. You see how elegant she spoke, and it's like, but you know, to talk to the American audience the way that she spoke. I thought that was brilliant, the way she said that. You know what I mean? You know, unbelievable. You know, and I think this is so important because you never want your name to be lost in history. And I think what we're doing here is we're celebrating that. And I think it's so important.
Do you know where her papers are?
Well, it's very strange. What happened is that she died in 1968. And when she died, two of her sisters, she had three sisters, as I mentioned before, two of her sisters were actively working with her in one way or another. One was running like the academy. I'm assuming some others was helping with the publishing part because she couldn't do that all by herself. And they have this, everything in the school, right? In the academy, in the cooking academy. And, when she died, I think what we know is that the sisters tried to keep it up, right? Tried to keep up with the legacy and tried to keep up with the business and all that. But, I don't know. They either decided not to do it, or it was too much, or were not interested anymore. For whatever reason, they just, I guess the gossip is that they just put all the stuff outside in the street and leave the neighbors to take books, notes, pots and pans, everything that they have in the culinary academy because they needed to close it. So they just let people take it. I've been in the old academy now. It's a car repair shop. Or at least it was last time I was there, but maybe now it's a Starbucks or something. But, back then, in some point it was a car repair shop and you can, I asked them to let me go in and you can still see like some of the cooking surfaces where she used to work. And the guy who run the thing, he remembers that all these ladies coming there and taking classes and all those things, right? But there's not, I mean, I think most of the reference that we have about her is her books. That's all we have. And the books have some introductions and give us some clues about her, but most of the, there's no notes, handwritten notes about her. So I have some scans of some of personal documents, but nothing really, very helpful to construct her life. There's a lot of missing pieces.
So, Mauricio, I think one of the things that we want to do and what we can accomplish, I think we do a good job, my mom and I, is to be able to celebrate all the different figures and leaders in our beautiful culture and our history through food. And I would love, because, you know, I have a scholarship, a foundation where I put Latino kids to culinary school, and I want to name one for my mom, obviously, but obviously for your great aunt. So I think I would love to do that right here and then be able to choose, right, Mom? A couple ladies, and then they're housed under your beautiful family's legacy with Doña Josefina. I think that would be great. That way the story continues to live, right, Mom?
Yeah, because it's just a shame that so few people know about it. I mean, this American book, this bilingual book, I think is the only way to link her to the United States at this point. And of course, the Schlesinger Library.
Right. Well, first of all, Aaron, of course, thank you so much. That will be absolutely awesome. And I think everybody in the Velasquez de León family and in the Mexican culinary world will thank you for that. I think that's a great idea because, a lot of people in these new generations, they don't know who she is, right? I mean, for me, everybody in my mom's generation had her books for sure. And when I start talking to this with my family members, I receive a lot of copies because they have copies. They're like, oh, I want to give it to you. So I have a small number of copies, but those copies obviously are antiques, right? They are antiques and nobody from the new generation have seen them. They only have seen pictures of it. So yeah, anything that we can do to keep her legacy alive is absolutely fantastic. Thank you.
Wouldn't that be brilliant, Mom?
It's a beautiful idea, honey.
We have one lady that represents you, represents Doña Josefina, and then every year we select two ladies, two young ladies, and then they have, you know, part of their curriculum is to be able to, you know, reconstruct some of your recipes, her recipes, and just have this beautiful. Wouldn't that be great? So that's what we're going to do. We're doing it.
No, and the thing is that her recipes are very traditional. So it's very much in the kind of work that I do.
Right. So going back, speaking of the recipes and the book that Josefina has mentioned, it's Mexican Cookbook Devoted to American Homes. I think this is like, this is a jewel. I mean, this book, it's a bilingual book.
Where do you get it, though? I mean, because here we want everyone to shamelessly plug and make sure that everyone knows where to get this. So is it reprinted? How do people find it?
Only on eBay and in all editions. There's no new copies. It was published, I believe, 1947, the first time. It went out. The last printing was in 1970. So a couple of years after she passed away.
We're going to change that. We're going to figure out how to get that done. Okay?
Right. Yeah, no, it will be fantastic. Because it's just the way she addresses the issue of, like, we are two countries, two cultures, and try to blend them together into love from good cooking and so on. It's just amazing. And I've made a lot of her recipes. And I mean, it's just fantastic. It's a fantastic book.
Mauricio, and I want to make the parallel. There's an unbelievable, because there's a woman named Mitza Villapol, who is a Cuban home cook. I don't know. Yeah, you have to look her up, right, Mom? You know Nitza, yeah. No? And she was this unbelievable, pre-Castro cook in Cuba that cataloged all these unbelievable recipes. Nitza Villapol. And she was, like, also very much in the same line with your great aunt. So I think these ladies need to have that recognition. So we're going to figure out a way to be able to publish some of the recipes. Maybe we get it done. I'll talk to our team to make sure that this happens. Because this is a treasure trove, right, Mom? This is something that's like, this is something that people need to access in culinary schools.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. So, Sarella, I have a question for you. I know I'm the guest, I'm not supposed to ask questions. But what's your favorite recipe? Do you remember one recipe from Josefina that you like and that you have done?
Yeah, I like her manchamanteles.
Manchamanteles?
Yeah, she's, you know, it's from the Mole family, but it has all sorts of dried fruits. And just imagine that she was making this in the 50s. And I was around that same time making my mother's version of it. So it was wonderful to compare it. See, her recipes are really traditional. I mean, she lets you, she says, for instance, let's make a quesadilla or a gordita with chorizo. But if you're in the United States and can't find chorizo, use Italian sausage. You know, she was like very, very practical. You know, so she's teaching you how to make masa and all this stuff, but how to adapt it in the United States and still get the Mexican flavor.
Right. Yeah, she acknowledged at the beginning of the book that, I mean, this is the 50s, right? So there was no, all the Latin American stores that we have now in the United States and distribution of all the big brands, you can find everything pretty much in the United States in these days, or most of the stuff. So she has all these things like, well, you probably won't find this, but there's always a way to substitute and still do this the Mexican way, right? And that was a great way. My favorite one is, and it's in the article I wrote for Saveri, is the albóndigas con chipotle.
I love those too.
I have two boys, and boys love meatballs in all kinds of, I mean, Korean meatballs, Italian meatballs, Mexican meatballs, all the thing. And their top favorite has been forever, the albóndigas con chipotle.
But Marisa, you have twin boys.
I have twin boys, yeah.
You have so my mom has twins as well.
I didn't know that.
Yes. And you live in Baltimore.
That's correct.
Yeah, and I had a restaurant in Baltimore. So I love Baltimore. It's one of my favorite cities. It's like, I always tell people, it's like the New Orleans of the North. Or we're the Baltimore of the South. But it's a beautiful place, and I love Baltimore. Really rich, rich place.
So tell me about your publishing business, because maybe you could get...
Well, yeah. So we're in Baltimore. We started the company. It's called Duo Press, and... you're going to like this around because it's called Duo because I have twins. So Duo, which means two, dos. So that's why we call it Duo Press. And we started as a very small regional publisher doing just children's books in the regional area. We started in New York, living in Queens. And then because of my wife's job, she got an offer to work here at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore. So we moved here. And we've been very happy in Baltimore. So for somebody who grew up in Mexico City, then moved to New York, and then moved to Baltimore, this is a very small city, very manageable city, right? So anyway, so we have this company here, and we publish mostly children's books, but we are doing some adult books. And part of my plan has always been to do a book about Josefina, obviously, right? I mean, that makes complete sense. I have the book project. Before I started my company, we were like sort of like pitching the project to different publishers and all those things. And then now that I have my company, the conflict that I have is like, I don't know how she did it. She published 140 books. We publish 12, 14 books a year. I have a team of people. I have computers.
And it seems like a lot.
it seems like way too much. I don't really have the bandwidth to focus on doing a book about Josefina, which totally kills me, right? Because I would love to do it. Because when you're running a publishing company, you don't have really time to write, right? You need to. So this is something I would love to write. So it's been kind of a conflict. But in some point, you'll see a Josefina book in our list for sure, and it's going to be absolutely wonderful. And we probably should talk about how to collaborate and do something together in some point, because it will be a great project. But yeah, I mean, I think it's sort of like it's very interesting that she was a publisher. I'm a publisher. She cooked amazing food. I like to cook. I'm not saying I'm good, but I like to cook, and I like to keep the Mexican presence with my family.
And you're a good writer. You're a lovely writer, too.
Thank you, Sarella. Thank you.
But you have it in your bones. Like, our family, we're third generation cookbook authors.
Right.
You know what I mean? In our family. So we have it just like you, Mauricio. It's in our, and it's in our bones.
Right. And I think it's a great opportunity for all of us to keep, because the more we write about Mexican food, the more people will know about it, right? So we have that mission. Something else that I want to mention about Josefina that is very interesting is that she was, on top of everything that we've been talking about, she was fundamental in explaining new things to people in Mexico, right? So she has like, this book is called Cómo Cocinar con los Aparatos Modernos, which basically explains how to use everything from a blender to a pressure cooker and all these things. And she gets this book and she gets ads from the manufacturers, General Electric and all those to support her book. So
I think it's amazing.
It's incredible.
And people are doing that now.
Right. And this is a 1950 something book. And the interesting thing is, like, she talks that it's a struggle for her to let Mexican women that it's okay to do a salsa in the blender, not just in the molcajete, right? So she was like, now we have this new machine that is called the blender. You should use it. And Mexican women, including my own mother, didn't want to use a blender for salsa. They were like, no, I'm not going to use the blender to make a salsa, right?
This is amazing.
So, it, like, yeah, the molcajete is fantastic. And, of course, we love the molcajete. But, you know, sometimes you have to do a little something a little faster. So use the blender. It's this machine called the blender. And you can make beans in 2 hours instead of 7 hours.
In the crock pot. Yeah. Like, yeah. Wow.
So she was ahead of everything. It was incredible. And she was also very quiet. She didn't like to be a celebrity. I mean, I don't think the term celebrity was used back in those days, but she was very shy. She was always kind of in the background. And
well, that's where she differs from our family. My mom's like, I want my name in lights.
Right.
You don't know the story, but when I was little, I asked my mom, why did you name me Sarella? Why couldn't I have a normal name? And she said, because it's going to look great in lights, honey.
And it does. And a big part of your success in the restaurant in New York, I think it had to do with the name. The name was such a great name.
It's memorable. Everyone called me your Z, you know? And my son's name is Yuma, Y-U-M-A. And it's okay. One of those names you just remember, you know?
Right. That's so great.
And what are your names of your sons?
Pablo and Alejandro.
Oh, I love that.
And are they very much similar to you? Or?
Well, I don't know yet.
How old are they?
I think they are. They one of them. Well, now they're 15. They actually turn 16 tomorrow. Believe it or not. But one of them is just crazy. Like, I actually asked him yesterday what he wanted to eat for his birthday, and he wants pulpos en su tinta.
Oh. Wow.
That's what he wants. He wants octopus or calamari.
Look right. At him. I love
so
it.
He's really a foodie.
And your other boy?
The other it's also everything, but he's a little bit more careful. He's not as adventurous, but they love, I mean, we have the chance to live in Mexico City for a little bit, and they just want to go to any taqueria in Mexico City, and they love all the food from El Bajío, from Carmen Tita Ramirez, and all the restaurants that we went there. I think they want to go to Mexico City just to eat. That's all they want to do.
You need to take them to Oaxaca. It has become an amazing culinary center.
We have that plan, and then COVID hit, and it's been in standby for now. But we will go to Oaxaca as soon as it's manageable for us as a family and with the COVID situation and all that.
Well, you'll find me there because I'm moving there. Anyway, anything else that we should not forget to say? Except, I mean, for her television career, we have not really talked about her television career.
Yeah, so she worked I have a book here called, you're going to love this, Aaron. It's called La Cocina en el Aire, the kitchen.
I love it. I love it.
On the Air by Josefina Velasquez de Leon. And in this book, what she does is she collects recipes that she spoke about or she talked about in different radio shows and TV shows. She didn't have a show per se, but she was a frequent guest, especially in radio. There was four stations in Mexico City that were, you know, AM radio back in the day. And she was a frequent guest on all those shows, and she will talk about different things and just giving recipes and tips to people, just like we do these days. And then she will do some on television as well. I've been looking for some footage of that, but you know,
it's hard to come by. I would imagine.
Very, very hard to come by. I'm sure there's something somewhere, but
no, what we need to do is get some of those really those smart young people that are like those television and movie buffs, and they're going to go into the archives and figure out where all this beautiful footage lives. And then we're going to extract them, you know, and give them the resource they need to bring all that forward.
Right.
I think it's important to make sure that we're doing everything necessary to make sure, obviously, that your family's legacy lives on, and we're going to do it in many different ways. So, Mauricio, how can people engage you and be able to continue this conversation and ask for more information? Websites, emails that you feel comfortable giving?
Yeah, of course. So right now, we used to have a website back when we did a couple of events at Zarela in New York and all these things. We have a website for a long time. Then because, you know, life happens, the website wasn't updated frequently. So we sort of like stopped that. And at this moment, from my end, there is nothing really tangible. But one of the things that this invitation that you had for me, which it was like a little bit like a reminder that I need to get these things done, right? And I need to put this into the place that they deserve. So I'm gonna be having a website in the next couple of weeks for sure for her. And for now, you can just contact me anybody who wants any information or wants to share anything about Josefina Velasquez de Leon, they can just contact us in my company email, which is very easy. It's hello@duopressbooks.com. It's hello@duopress.com. Sorry, duopressbooks.com.
Yeah, and I think we're going to also reinforce that through HRN, right? I would imagine Miss Amy and all of our team there are going to make sure that we have all your information readily available. And like I said, we're going to nominate one of our foundation kids that's going to have the name of Josefina, and it's going to be beautiful. And I can't wait. And we're going to tell that story. And part of it's going to be that they have to sort of rescatar and rescue those recipes and make sure that they can write a little article on your great aunt. And I'm looking forward to that.
That's absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much.
It'll be a wonderful honor for her.
No, and you, Mom, are the one that put this all together. I know that Doña Josefina has been such a big influence on you. And that's why we're really excited that this is all coming to pass.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's just been wonderful to have this chance to talk with you, Mauricio. Mm-hmm. And we'll follow up on this. And it's, you know, it's going to be a big deal. You're going to see. We're going to get the interest up there of the culinary world.
That would be fantastic. Thank you so much. It's really an honor to be here talking about Josefina. And to see you, Zarela, is wonderful. And Aaron, I never met you in person, but I've seen you on TV many times, and I really admire you.
Thank you. I admire your
work.
Thank you.
So thank you so much for the invitation. This has been great.
Saludos, mi rey.
Gracias. Saludos.
Cooking in Mexican from A to Z is powered by Simple Cast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without your support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like. Tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.